Okay, folks, we're so excited because you're listening to a bonus episode. These midweek drops are where we invite some of our favorite past guests back on the pod to revisit their characters. We are able to do these now because of your support. You can get these bonus episodes in full by being a Patreon supporter. The link is in the show notes. Or you can become an Apple Premium subscriber. That's just by smashing that button in your podcast player. For anyone else, head to that link in the show notes and use SupportCast to have these bonus episodes show up in any podcast player that you use.
Mega is an improvised satire from the staff of a fictional megachurch.
Hey, yo, this is your friend, De LaBont. I'm hijacking the podcast again because unfortunately for my mom, Hallie, she's not exactly a digital native. Today, I received a call from my new friend, Bart Campolo, and we talk about Bart Ehrman and T.M. Lehrman and a lot of really great thinkers and people. And basically, Bart is a guy who has a podcast called Humanize Me. He used to be a believer and he's not anymore, but he's one of those guys that's like, don't burn it down type of thing. He's not trying to like look at the divisive stuff between like maybe faith-based people and people who no longer believe that way, but he's looking for like, what are the common values that we have and how can we find common ground and make life meaningful and not about like heaven, but making your life heaven here right now instead of hell, which life can often be a lot like hell anyway. So he's gonna call me, and I hope that you enjoy being with me today on an episode that I've hijacked the podcast again. This is Mega. Hello. Hey, this is Day.
This is Bart Campolo.
Hi, Bart. Should I call you Bart or Mr. Campolo or?
You should certainly call me Bart. Everybody calls me Bart.
That's cool. I don't know any Barts. So you're the first Bart I've ever met, which is something people say to me sometimes too, because there's not a lot of Days.
Well, actually, there are a lot of Days, but there are not a lot of people named Day.
Hey, yeah. I really appreciate you calling me, and full disclosure, I'm recording this because I've been tinkering around with hijacking my mom's podcast, which is a podcast from the mega church where I was raised, Twin Hills Community Church in Indianapolis, Indiana. Where are you calling in from, Bart?
I am calling you from not that far away. I'm just down the road in Cincinnati, Ohio.
That's cool. Well, I really appreciate your time because when this hits the airwaves, I'm not sure who the audience will be, but I'm assuming that some people will know who your dad is. I looked up who your dad is, and I'm specifically interested to talk to you because I've been trying to have conversations with people who maybe understand the world that I'm from in terms of growing up in the church and then being a person who starts to have thoughts that maybe feel like they're, you know, not in line with what I was raised with. And so I'm trying to talk to people who are either on the other side or on this side or somewhere in the middle and see what I can learn. And so I have a parent who works in the church and is a leader in the church. And it's very important to my parent that I sometimes I think it's almost like your parents only think they're successful if they replicate themselves. You know what I mean? Like you, what do you think that instinct is from, to be like, I am a success if my offspring see the world the way I do, believe the way I do, behave the way I do, all that same stuff. Like, what do you think that is? You know, that they can't be curious about who we actually are instead of just, you know, and getting to know us as who we are. They're just so important about imprinting themselves on us. What's that?
Well, I mean, Day, you say your mom's a leader in an evangelical megachurch.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a kind of a very specific kind of parenting vibe.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is that one of the reasons that evangelical Christians are so desirous of their children and the rest of the world, yeah, believing exactly what they do, is because they're afraid that if you don't believe exactly what they do, the loving God of the universe will burn you in eternal torment and hell for the rest of, you know, for the rest of forever.
Yeah.
And so like, they're scared. So, you know, on some level you go like, why is it so important to my mom that I accept Jesus Christ as my personal Lord and Savior? Because the consequences of you not doing so in her mind are unbelievably horrible.
Yeah. I just heard that girl who grew up in the Westboro Baptist Church talk about how, you know, she felt very gaslit because she was taught that this is love. And what she was taught love was, she then grew up and realized it was hate. And she was like, whoa, you told me that hate was actually love or whatever. And sometimes I think that of like, why do we as Christians claim to have the, like, we've sort of cornered the market on love, but that, like, sending people to hell, how does that fit into love? Because that more feels like an abusive relationship where, like, if you don't love me, I'll destroy you. Like, if you said that to a woman in a marriage or something, then people would try to get you out of there.
You know, that's a very good observation on your part. And I think one of the things I want to tell you today, just coming out of the gates, is this is kind of not my first rodeo when it comes to talking with people who are raised up in the church and are trying to figure out, like, I don't know if this all holds together.
Right.
Ever since, like, I grew up in Christianity, but then, like, I became a Christian as a high schooler. Like, when I was about your age,
yeah,
that was when, like, I went to youth group and got saved and got excited about following Jesus. And I spent the next 30 years doing that stuff, like being like a missionary, being a preacher, running around. And so when I left the faith, when I couldn't believe in supernatural God anymore, when it all sort of, like, there was nothing left of my faith, when that became well known, it was kind of a big deal. I mean, I'm thinking, like, if you're a pastor's son in a megachurch, like, if you came out and said, like, I don't believe in God, like,
yeah,
that would be a big deal.
Yeah.
And so when I came out, a lot of people would reach out to me and say, I don't think I believe either. And the thing that was the hardest for most of them, the thing that is the hardest for most of them, is the notion that the people that they love will say to them, well, if you don't believe in God, you're going to go to hell. If you don't trust Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior, you're going to go to hell. They'll say that to them. And then the next Sunday, they'll go to church and they'll sing, our God is an awesome,
yeah,
God. Like, they worship a God that would kill me.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, even if you believe God would kill me, like, even if you think, like, that's the kind of God he is, I would think, like, that would, like, diminish your respect and admiration for that God. But they're like, God is wonderful. And you're like, but he's going to kill me forever for not being able to believe that, right? And they're like, yep. And that's really hard for some of us that grew up in Christendom, is to know that the people that we left behind are okay with God damning everybody else to hell.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's, is that part of what's hard for you?
Well, I've done a lot of looking into, like, what I did was just be like, man, hell sucks. And I hate thinking about it all the time. And I took it so seriously that then I was like, well, let's look into this. And then I, like, really had trouble finding it in the Bible. And then the more I, like, looked it up, the idea of heaven and hell, you know, like, it started to become really funny to me. Even, like, the ascension, you know what I mean? Did he just shoot off from the Mount of Olives like it was Cape Canaveral, and he's just shooting up through the layers of atmosphere, and he's like, whoa, the oxygen's getting thin and it's getting cold, and what happened to his physical body? And, like, oh yeah, the Bronze Age mind believed in a three-tiered universe or whatever, but now we have satellites. And so it's like, okay, well, then we just sort of stop preaching the ascension from the pulpit or something. And I found that the more I learned about it, then the more issue I took with people who say these things, like, our ideas of Satan or Lucifer, those are from Paradise Lost, man. There's very little in the Bible. Even if you look in Revelation, anyway, I can get into it because the way I found you was because of Bart Ehrman and T.M. Lerman, from your podcast, Humanize Me, which I really like, and I really recommend it to anyone, Humanize Me, wherever you get your podcast, because you get to talk to really cool thinkers. But wait, even before, can I just ask you one quick thing? When you were a teenager and you decided to become a Christian, was it because you weren't really thinking about it, or was your sense for belonging stronger, or was it just that it put you in a community where you could, like, meet people that you liked and maybe date and stuff? Why did you do that?
You know, no, I mean, that's a really good question, because, like, I obviously, like, my dad's this hyper Christian evangelist. Like, I grew up always knowing that my dad believed in God, and he was a nice guy. Like he was the nice kind of Christian,
yeah,
you know, like, wanted to serve, help the poor and all that stuff. So, like, The reason I wasn't a Christian growing up wasn't because I like was rebelling against my parents. It was just that, like, the whole idea just didn't seem very plausible to me. Like, it never made sense to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Until I was 15 years old. And this buddy on my soccer team took me along to his youth group. Uh-huh. And it was like a mega church type of youth group. So I walk in, there's 300 kids there. They're all super nice.
Yeah.
They're playing rock music. Yeah. Like, they're having a great time together. And I was a nice kid.
Yeah, it's belonging.
And I walked in. His youth group felt like a club for nice people, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But even more than that, as what I figured out is that the reason my friend had invited me was because, like, he and his buddies were on a mission to, like, help people and to help them find not just salvation, but, like, to reach out to lonely kids and bring them into the youth group so that they would feel connected, you know, to, like, help kids that were being bullied and protect them. Like, they were sort of like, we're on a mission from God to, like, make our high school a more loving place. And so for me, like, that mission, like, we're going to all band together and fight for goodness. I was like, that was really appealing to me. What was funny was, and maybe you can relate to this, was like, yeah, I love that group. I love that mission. I love the identity that it gave me and everything. The problem for me was, like, I still didn't think the narrative made much sense. And like, you know, people say, like, did you accept Jesus Christ, you know, in order to avoid hell and go to heaven? I was like, no, like, all that supernatural stuff, that wasn't the attraction. That was the price of getting into the group.
Yeah.
I was like, I really want to be part of this group, but, like, what do I got to believe? And they're like, well, you got to believe this and that. And I'm like, okay, I'll do my best.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
We're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay.
Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why do you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people, like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinefo.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Struggling with the crazy theology stuff. What was the attraction for me was the community and the sense of purpose that it gave me, and the sense of, and also like the sense of, like, this is who we're supposed to date.
Yeah.
This is who you're not supposed to date. This is like how you're supposed, like, it sort of made my life a lot simpler.
I get,
like,
that.
I was like, what am I going to do with my life? And then, you know, all of a sudden it was all there for me on a plate. So, you know, like, that was the thing, is I got in. I wasn't convinced into Christianity. I was loved in.
Ah, there's that love again.
And that's why when people would make, would say, this doesn't make any sense or stuff like that, people would sort of attack my thinking. I was like, that's not where it's at for me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, this life works for me.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I, you know, it was shortly thereafter that I ended up, somebody said like, hey, for Jesus, will you run a summer camp in inner city Camden, New Jersey? This like ghetto neighborhood. And I was like, for Jesus, I'll do anything.
Yeah.
And it was when I got in among all these poor people that all of a sudden I started to go like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Wait a second. I thought God was in charge.
Yeah.
I thought God was just. I thought like, and like my theology started getting messed up almost immediately. Like almost as soon as I became a Christian, I was struggling to make sense of the Bible. I was struggling to make, you know, then I went to college and there were all these gay students. My roommates were gay and they were the greatest people I had ever met. But I was like, you know, where I came from, like we had to, you know, we had to tell them that, you know, God loves you, but he's going to burn you in hell unless you get straight.
Yeah.
And that was so wacky for me.
Yeah.
And so like, I was like, I don't think that part of the Bible is true either. And so I like my Christian faith sort of started, my orthodoxy, my belief system started falling apart almost from the second I got in.
Yeah.
It was always hard for me to believe.
And in a way, I almost feel like as white guys growing up in America, we are sort of, I don't know if groomed is the word, or like trained or enculturated or something, that to like, oh, I can help you with that. And like, that's, and maybe it's like superhero movies or something, but it's like, that's an instinct in us to be like, oh, I got it. I know it. I have the answer. I have the thing I can help or whatever. Sort of like, you know, a pilgrim handing a native, a smallpox blanket. Anyway.
No, Dan, let me stop you because you're a kid. Okay. So let me tell you something. When I work with college students, when I work with kids, like what you just said is so self-aware. Like when we're young, we want to do something heroic.
Yeah,
we want to change the world.
Yeah.
We want to do something. And that was my end to Christianity. Now that I'm a secular humanist, like for a long time, I was a humanist chaplain at USC in Los Angeles. And when I would work with college students, what I found was like, if I just said to them, hey, let's all get together and not believe in God, they would go like, why? I don't need a group to do that. It wasn't until I started packaging it as like, hey, let's make the most of our lives by transforming the world into a better place. Like I've got a lot of data and I got a lot of science that would suggest that this is the way that we can be the most fulfilled as human beings. Like let's change the world in a positive way. Will you join my movement? Then they would go like, oh yeah, now I'm into it.
Yeah.
Like, I think like we have to challenge each other to do great things. I just don't think you need to believe in supernatural stuff to be inspired to want to make the world a better place. Like, I think that's kind of our hardwiring as human beings, particularly when you're young, when you're young.
Yeah. And I don't think it's really doing the planet any favors either. Like sometimes I think one of the most destructive things that has ever been written down and translated and printed and published and read is that verse about having dominion over the animals. Cause I think that there's something in that mentality that is like completely causing us to destroy the earth. And I don't know, but maybe AI is going to wipe us out and that's not going to be a bad thing in terms of the planet's future. But,
You don't want to get me started on all the existential threats to humanity, because like I'm into that stuff. Like, I don't think we make it very long.
Yeah.
No. I mean, there's a great scientific thing. One of the guys who worked on the atomic bomb was a guy named Fermi. And Fermi asked the question. He said, if it is like, it's clearly, it's mathematically logical that there's life on other planets. And he's like, there's probably thousands of places in the universe where, you know, with all the billions of planets and billions of stars and, you know.
Yeah.
He's like, why haven't we met any of them? Why have none of them visited us? Why, like, and, you know, and like, when I think about Fermi's paradox, or, you know, like if there's so many civilizations out there, why haven't we connected with any of them? I'm like, my guess is that wherever a civilization emerges, the people get smart enough to destroy themselves before they get smart enough to restrain themselves.
Whoa.
And so they never get good enough. They never can reach out very far beyond their planet, because right about the time that they're getting the technology to get off the planet, they blow it up.
Holy smokes.
Or they blow themselves up. I don't think we as a species are really very well, like we're, you know, we got some issues.
Yeah.
But what I do think, you know, when you say that verse about dominion over the earth, I think that's probably the most destructive verse for the animals and the plants. I think that the most destructive verses for the people are the ones about hell. Because I meet a lot of people who even who have left the church years and years ago, who are still haunted by the fear that that they or their relatives, you know, like are gonna suffer eternally. And the other thing, even the verses about heaven, I think are almost as destructive because they keep people from realizing that their lives are finite and that you don't have forever and that you really need to be busy making the most of this golden opportunity you have to be conscious.
Definitely.
And so if you convince, you know, you probably at your church, you've met people that left their families and went to like Africa as missionaries and like suffered mightily, like, you know, because they're like, well, God will reward me in the next life.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm sort of like, you know, this is the life that you have. You need to figure out how do you make the most of it now? And so, yeah. So I think like, depending on who you're, if you're a cockroach, the dominion over the earth is the problem.
That's so
interesting. If you're a person, I think the hell and heaven are the problem.
And it causes us to not only have so much personal suffering and angst as individuals, but then we inflict it on other people with these hideous ideas. And the funny thing about hell being and heaven being such a destructive idea for humanity, it's interesting because it's their dude, Jesus, who was saying exactly what you're saying, which is the kingdom of heaven is now. And so because we're waiting for heaven or because we're fearing hell, we're not actually living right now and all that. And the whole thing is that Jesus didn't even have a concept of a soul. The human of Jesus had to show the physical body and had to ascend as a physical body because he didn't have any concept of their of life existing outside of the physical body because they didn't have an idea of souls yet because the Greek guys hadn't come along and made that a thing.
You said I was the first Barth that you've met, but the more I hear you talk, the more I think you might actually already have met my friend Bart Ehrman.
Just on YouTubes.
That's right up his alley. And so like if you want to think about like how did we get to this weird way of thinking, there's nobody I know that knows that better than Bart Ehrman. He's a really wonderful resource.
Man, I would give
it. Because the other thing is he's also like loving as hell. He's the nicest person you'll ever meet.
Yeah. I like him mostly because I know a lot of Christians who hate him. So I'm like, he must be cool. And he's just New Testament, right? That's his jam. He's like a scholar on New Testament.
I mean, that's his mega jam. He knows more about all the Bible than, you know, anyone I've ever known.
Yeah.
Times 10. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. May I ask you a question that's more on
Wait, no, Day. You can't. You can't ask me any more questions before I ask you a question.
Oh, okay.
Because, when somebody reaches out to me, a lot of times, like, what's happening is that either they have left the faith or they're contemplating leaving the faith. And one of the things that I'm always curious about is, like, you know, who are you talking to? What's the biggest issue for you about leaving the faith? Or what's the thing that's the hardest for you about it? Like what are you struggling with at this stage in the game?
I think I would have said the Pascal's wager thing at one point of just, again, like you said, fear. But then the more I actually educated myself and became more theologically literate, I got to the point where I was like, okay, let's even look at Pascal's wager, like, which says basically like, just in case it's true, like, yeah, then invest in it. Almost like, you know, we know money is fake, but we all still have a Roth IRA or whatever. Anyway, but I realize like, oh, okay, but what's at the essence of that is me devoting myself to a vivisector who calls damning people into eternal torment, love. And so I was like, you know what? Annihilation would be compassionate. Just annihilate me. Have it be like, have you ever gone under anesthesia? God, I hope that's what death is like, where it's just like, you're there and then you're not. That's it. That's all the just blackout. And it's not even a blackout. It's just, it's nothingness. It's whatever. Blackout would be a thing. But I think I was like, oh, I don't want to devote myself to someone. Basically, I think Pascal's wager puts you into Stockholm syndrome of like, okay, well, then you might as well love your abuser. And it was too much cognitive dissonance for me. I think ultimately now, Bart, I'm at a point where I'm like, what it looks like to me at its essence is pain management. And so some people are so traumatized by the story of their life that the narrative of Jesus really appeals to them, and it's their form of pain management. And it's almost like they become love addicts, or it's almost like OCD with, church and the Bible and the story of Jesus and the good news, which also, to me, every time I heard the good news, I was like, then why does it feel like bad news? You know, not only because hell seems boring and like shitty and stuff, but like also...
Heaven seems boring.
That's what I meant to say. Heaven seems so boring. Like, so if I can do every single trick on a skateboard and never sprain an ankle or whatever, then like what's next? And also I don't like praise music and stuff like that. So I look at it as pain management of like, there are people who are managing great trauma with their Christianity. And then there are some people who are just doing the pain management of like, on a more simple scale, I just sort of don't know how to raise my kids and don't feel like I have answers or authority. So I'm just going to take them to church and be like, here's some answers and some authority. And that's like a level of like less pain, but it's pain management. And I'm like, I just don't think that you can put your form of pain management on other people. Like some people drink all day as their form of pain management, and you wouldn't want that forced on you. You know, some people go to sex workers. Some people become Christians. Some people get on antidepressants and go to therapy 3 times a week. Sometimes, and I'm not even saying anything bad about that because I'm in therapy or whatever. I don't have any like shame for that. But like, obviously we're all having a hard time. I don't know if it's modern culture and we haven't evolved as a species to like be comfortable living in our current conditions because it's so natural and unnatural to like what we're wired for, you know, like since was it Eisenhower with the highways, like we're no longer living in tribes and in community and we're individuals, and America is so sick and there's such a deep illness here that it's hard to get well. And so we all have our things, you know? And
so let me slow you down. Let me slow you down just for a second. Because like, I understand, and I think I understand, and I certainly sort of share the reasons why you're thinking that may be pain management for some people, but that pain management won't work for me because it only works if you think it's true. It's like a placebo, but you have to kind of like, once you know, if you know it's a placebo, it's not going to work as well. And so I understand why you're not buying into the faith of your parents and that lifestyle. I guess what I'm really wondering is like, okay, so you know you're not going to do that. What's hard for you when you turn the other way and you look and you face the world without a Christian community behind you? Like, what's hard for you about moving on and figuring out what you are going to do with your life? I mean, is there any struggle for you in terms of knowing what comes next?
Yeah, it feels like very, like if I'm looking into the crystal ball of my future, it's just so cloudy. I don't know what it means. And I'm curious about what the difference is between, like, you remember what it felt like to be a kid still under your parents' roof. What's the difference between still being a kid of a parent on your own out in the world? Like, how different is it being an adult child than being a still under the roof child?
Do you mean like what's my relationship with my parents compared to your relationship with your parents?
What's the emotional experience of being a son, even when you're grown?
Oh, that's a good one.
When you listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast, you get a belly full of laughs and a head full of real information. Our gallimaufry of expert guests answer questions on stuff adults need to know. I have mold in my dwelling. What do I do? What's gerrymandering? What happens chemically when I fall in love? How do I handle a parent-teacher conference? What are microbes? Listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Solve problems, get laughs.
Because I really value truth, misinformation really, really scares me. And that's why I'm excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that dismantles New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis. At their best, they attack public health efforts in times of crisis. And at their worst, it's like they're recruiting for the fever dream of QAnon. On Conspirituality, You will have a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic all discussing stories and cult dynamics and helping educate us and using proven science as their guiding light. I really recommend the Jordan Klepper episode talking about creating comedy in the MAGAverse. Jordan's incredible. And I also really love the Medical Medium episode. It's really good, and not just because I've had my own weird experiences with mediums. From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality Podcast will help you stay informed against misinformation and resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Because I really value truth, misinformation really, really scares me. And that's why I'm excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that dismantles New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis. At their best, they attack public health efforts in times of crisis, and at their worst, it's like they're recruiting for the fever dream of QAnon. On Conspirituality, you will have a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic all discussing stories and cult dynamics and helping educate us and using proven science as their guiding light. I really recommend the Jordan Klepper episode talking about creating comedy in the MAGAverse. Jordan's incredible. And I also really love the Medical Medium episode. It's really good, and not just because I've had my own weird experiences with mediums. From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality Podcast will help you stay informed against misinformation and resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, it's funny because I'm a therapist now myself. Like, that's what I do for a living. And I would say that most of, like, a significant number of the people that come to me, the driving issue in their life is their relationship with their parents.
Yeah.
That in some way those relationships define us, not just when we're little kids.
Yeah.
But we spend our whole lives,
yeah,
trying to make sense of those relationships.
Yeah.
And so what's funny is when I was about 25, just about to have my first kid, I was starting this inner city ministry, and I needed some money, and I didn't have enough money to do this kind of work that I wanted to do. And my dad said, "Well, why don't you write a book with me?" Like, he's like, "My books always sell." And so I did. I wrote this book called Things We Wish We Had Said, which was letters back and forth to him about growing up. Now, you got to remember, I'm still in the faith at this time, right?
Yeah.
But like, I'm writing about this act of growing up. And basically, I'm trying to work out my relationship with my dad. What you taught me about sexuality, what you taught me about work, how you made me feel about the world and my place in it and all that stuff. Working on stuff. And when I got done with this book, I thought, that's it. I've worked out my relationship with my father. And I had. And I was like, great. And then 5 years later, I was 5 years older and I had kids. And all of a sudden, everything was different. And I understood things about my father, and I had questions for my father, and I had anger towards my father about things I hadn't even known existed when I was 23. And then 10 years later, it changed again. And so, like, you go like, you know, when did you make your peace with my father? And I go like, I've made my peace with my father 20 times. You keep having to make it again because he changes. I change.
Yeah.
Life changes. And so, you know, so I think when you say, like, what's it like? I wish I could say, it's completely different. It's so much easier once you're an adult. And I would go like, it's not. And what's funny is it gets easier for a minute there, and then your parents start to falter and fade. And then it's hard in a whole other way. Because you're like, how do I take care of these people? And like, they screwed me over, and yet there's nobody else going to take care of them. Or they didn't screw me over, so I owe them, or like, whatever. And then they start doing things that they start becoming different people than the people that raised you. And so you can't even yell at them anymore about the things that they said, because that person's not even there.
Whoa.
It's a different person.
Yeah.
You know, so I wish, you know, you say, like, what's it like? And I go like, what's it like on what day, when you're how old, depending on what, like, it's complicated. That's all I can tell you. It's really complicated.
Yeah.
The one thing that I can tell you is this, is that I used to work in this really harsh neighborhood. And a lot of the parents of the kids I was hanging out with were in jail. And I knew this one guy, his father had beaten the crap out of him and just treated him horribly. I mean, it was like literally it was like the cigarette burns on the back and the whole thing. And when his father came out of prison, his kid was actually living with me. And he was all excited and he wanted to go see his dad. And I was like, I'm feeding you. I'm loving you. I'm taking care of you. And you want to go see this guy who's been nothing? And it was like, I suddenly realized like, it's chemical. He knows that guy's going to treat, and he just keeps going back, just hoping maybe he'll approve of me this time. Maybe he'll see me this time. Maybe he'll care for me this time. And you realize like, we are just hardwired to care deeply about the people whose DNA is the closest to ours. And so you may think that all your problems with your parents are rooted in their crazy supernatural faith journey, but I promise you, it runs deeper than that. Christianity exacerbates the problems. Christianity causes parents to sometimes think it's okay to well, in the name of Jesus, I won't speak to you anymore because you're gay, or in the name of Jesus, I won't speak to you anymore because you're marrying a Muslim or whatever it is. Christianity complicates it, but I promise you that we could wipe Christianity off the face of the earth tomorrow and people would still have really hard relationships with their parents.
Yeah, and spend every decade of adulthood like ruminating over like these two people who brought you here. And I always hear people say like, do you see the older you get, like that you become more like them, even like physically or like, cause that's the crazy thing. We are them, right?
You know who your parents are. You ever played poker?
Yeah.
In poker, you get dealt a hand of cards, but that's not the end of the game.
Yeah.
The rest of the game is like, and a big part of whether you're going to win or lose is whether you get good cards or bad cards or what cards you get. But the real game starts once you have the cards. And then it's like, how do you play them? And really good poker players can take bad cards and they can beat you with good cards. And really bad poker players can get all the best cards in the world and they still lose. And so when people talk to me about their parents, I'm always like, look, there's nothing we can do about the hand you got dealt.
For the rest of our conversation, you can join Patreon, Supporting Cast, or Apple Premium. You'll get access to more bonus content, behind-the-scenes conversations, and early ad-free episodes. All of that is yours when you join and subscribe. A very special thanks to my main man, Bart Campolo. I mean, what a sport. He jumped in being himself while I was in character, and I enjoyed it thoroughly, and he's the best. And I'll say this, for a guaranteed better quality of life, get to know Bart Campolo and his guests over on his outstanding podcast, Humanize Me, wherever you get your podcasts. But only do it if, like, you know, you're interested in good vibes and healing and feeling less alone and being inspired by the possibilities of this beautiful life. I love you, Bart. Follow him at Humanize Me Podcast.